Let's Talk Development, Season 2, Episode 8.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Development, a podcast series of CDPR. I'm Samuel Naseem. I'm an assistant professor of economics at Colby College. And today I'm joined by my co-author and friend, Kulsoom Ahmed, who served as a practice manager at the World Bank and brings over 30 years of experience working in international development. Today, we're going to be talking about air pollution, a theme that both Kulsoom and I have worked on separately and collectively. As we know that South Asian residents, and especially citizens in Pakistan, in the specifically in the northern parts of the country, experience very high levels of air pollution. So we're going to be going through some of the policy-related aspects of how do we bring pollution levels down in our context. So good to have you on the podcast, Kulsoom.
Great to be here, Sawal. Nice to be discussing this topic with you, which is actually so important for Pakistan.
Right. So Kulsoom, before we sort of formally begin, I'm just curious, as somebody who's trained as a scientist, what made you kind of move into the social policy, public policy sphere?
Well, you're absolutely right. I have a PhD in chemistry and I studied natural sciences. And actually, I ended up applying to the World Bank as a very young, they call them the Young Professionals Program. It's a program where they hire people who are under the age of 32. I was in my 20s at the time. So that was really actually what kind of switched my career over. But the good thing is that actually science is very important, because when one talks about air pollution, it's actually chemistry that's going on in the air. And that's what's causing the effects, and it's biology going on in terms of what physiology is to your lungs, and you know what causes effects in terms of human beings. So actually, science is pretty critical to it all.
Yeah, that's a good point to kind of take to lead this conversation. If you look at the conversations around air pollution in Pakistan, not the perhaps the ones the more specific academic or the policy conversations, but the general conversations that are happening, there seem to be a lot of misconceptions around exactly what air pollution is. And I think there's a lot of overlap between concerns around climate change or global warming and air pollution as a local problem and as a health problem. So I was wondering if you could sort of take a little bit of time to address some of these misconceptions and clear up the confusion around emissions that cause global warming versus emissions that cause local health problems.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sawal. You're absolutely right. This is very important. People use the term air pollution very, very loosely, actually, I find, and appropriately so. Air pollution is anything you put in the air that pollutes the air somehow. Well, it could be the growing rice, which releases methane into the atmosphere. It could be cutting down a tree, which actually stops the tree absorbing carbon dioxide and putting oxygen into the air. It could be burning fuel in your car or in a power plant. It could be burning of the crops, as we hear quite a lot about that. So all of these different things do put different, if you will, chemicals, because that's what they are, methane, carbon dioxide, sulfur compounds, nitrogen compounds, they're all chemicals into the air. Now, what happens is some of those chemicals themselves are harmful. So if you have, for example, what we call fine particulates, and particularly black carbon, let's take that. These are particles which are less than 2.5 microns in diameter, and these make it through our lungs into our bloodstream, essentially, when we breathe them in. So they clearly affect health. But they also, the black carbon part of them Some of them are termed black carbon. Those particles also warm the atmosphere. In other cases, what's happening is you're releasing compounds which are reacting with other compounds in the air, chemicals in the air, and then causing what many of us talked about quite about 30 years ago was the hole in the ozone layer. That was just chemicals reacting, then reacted to cause that hole in the ozone layer, which let ultraviolet light, you know, onto the earth. And that too affects health, you know, in different ways. So there's kind of a lot of different things going on. I think it's important though to look at it in terms of impacts. So there's pollution which impacts human beings, right? And it could be in terms of their health. It could be their physical health. It could be in terms of their mental health, their brain development, their cognitive ability. It could be in economic terms for them, so that, you know, they're sick more often and therefore they aren't able to get to work. So it affects their productivity. It could be in terms of the economy. You could look at this, where when you have a lot of people whose productivity is affected, well, that affects the economy. Or you could look at it as all these days, you know, where you shut things down because the air pollution is so bad because of accidents and the country is shut down or the city is shut down. That affects the economy. And then you could affect it. You could look at the effect at the level of the planet. And at the level of the planet, probably the biggest effect going on is this warming of the planet. And there it doesn't matter whatever is warming the planet. It could be carbon dioxide, it could be methane, it could be various other things. It doesn't matter where those are being emitted from. The whole planet is one community. And that warms the planet, which results in the weather changing. And the weather changing results in our crops being affected, our having floods and droughts, and, you know, the whole dialogue, which everybody is very busy talking about at the moment in terms of climate change.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
I hope that clarifies, but you kind of need to look at people, the country, because if you add it all up and it actually has a massive effect, it affects the country, not just individuals. And then you can take it one level higher and say, okay, the entire planet is affected. Some pollutants affect everything. And some pollutants just affect, you know, just the health or just the economy or just the planet.
Yeah, I'm glad you made that distinction, because often I sort of see the two as a stock versus a flow pollutant problem. And so greenhouse gas emissions as a accumulation of a stock of emissions over time that leads to global warming, and then localized effects as a flow of emissions of certain kinds of pollutants that once inhaled cause particular, as you mentioned, both health and non-health effects. So just a follow-up to that, Kulsoom, and I know this is what we worked on a year ago when we were thinking about kind of broader policy implications of addressing air pollution in Pakistan. The way currently pollution is seen in our context is as an environmental problem. And given your sort of experience in Latin America, et cetera, I know you've been an advocate of pitching this as more of a health problem. And one of the main reasons for that, I mean, there's obviously a lot of overlap between this environmental externality and health. But the fact is that mobilizing resources to addressing the issue becomes simpler and easier once the problem is framed as a public health emergency versus as an environmental emergency. So I was wondering if you could sort of speak to that a bit.
Yeah. Actually, Sawal, I think it's even broader than that. The first time, at least the first project, let's put it this way, specifically, let's be very specific, that I worked on, I was a part of the team, was the Mexico City metropolitan area. It was like air quality project. It was really ultimately about economic, you know, the effect economically to the entire, literally to the entire economy. I remember having a discussion with the finance minister at one point of Mexico, and we had calculated that the health effects, either people not going to work or the actual costs of treatment, that was the health effect. So it actually there's a health dimension, but ultimately a public health dimension is also an economic dimension, because it's happening across such a large number of people that it takes on a different, you have to look at it differently. COVID was like that, right? If we had just had COVID happen in some small area, it's very different to COVID happening in an entire country or at the global level. So air pollution, in one sense, yes, may affect people locally and is a local problem. But if it's happening in a country in multiple cities and or in cities where, you know, there's a large, which play a large economy, then you actually get an effect which is way bigger than just looking at it in terms of a public health, an individual health problem.
Right.
And I'm only saying this, because then you see the solutions, what you do about it. I mean, I can give you a laundry list of, you know, here's what Mexico did, here's what Colombia did, here's what, I don't know, LA did, here's what, et cetera, et cetera. But in order to address these, you literally have to frame it in the wider context and understand what is it that you can do and what is it that it's affecting, because in a way your solution has to be commensurate to what it's doing, that problem.
No, that
what I mean? You're going to put a different level of resource in than just tell somebody, okay, wear a mask.
Yeah.
Or don't go out when it's, you know, if they're talking about a few people.
So this raises a question about sources. Well, one is, so there's one question about how air pollution, how it translates into poor air, emissions translate into poor air quality. The overall level of emissions could be identical, is perhaps the same in Lahore and Karachi, or maybe even higher in Karachi. But air quality, on the other hand, is different, and that's largely because of how it interacts, because of the meteorological effect. If you could talk about the sort of geographical variation in air quality, but then also there's a lack of data on sources of emissions, and so we've got this, you know, in the absence of source apportionment, which are the studies that need to be done to actually get a good sense of what the sources of emissions are and the contribution to overall emissions. We're living in a very noisy world, it seems. So how do we get a sense of what what our emission sources are, and to get a better sense of how should we tackle the problem?
Right. Two very good questions, Sawal. The first, what you put into the air. The second is the air that you breathe in. It literally depends on the meteorological conditions. So therefore, if one was to tackle air pollution in Karachi, which also, by the way, makes it up there in the list of top 10 cities in the world, some months of the year, sometimes even higher than Lahore, you have to then basically have a strategy that at least in those months where the wind is blowing in towards the city, what would you do different during those months so that you actually prevent the air pollution levels getting high? Lahore, on the other hand, is a very different problem. I mean, Lahore is like Mexico City, Bogota, LA. It has what's called inversions. The weather, the winds that blow hold the pollution in place. It's literally, they don't allow it to move. It's like they put a shutter on top. So it literally stays locked in place. So a city like Lahore is always going to have a problem, no matter what you do. And to this day, Mexico City, Bogota, they work actively at trying to reduce air pollution. It doesn't just happen automatically. So it's not just enough to say, we'll just change this or that, and suddenly it'll change. So you have to be like way more active about it in order to bring those levels down and then to keep them down. You can bring them down, but then to keep them down. So that's the first point. Your second point in terms of what do you do about it?
Well, sure, sir.
Source apportionment. Sorry, I think source apportionment is actually very important. I mean, if the air pollution problem is such an important problem in Pakistan, and you've got the data, you're the one who talks about this data about how many years of life are lost. Do you want to share that data? Maybe you should share it first before I talk about source apportionment. But we're talking about, what, 6 or 7 years of life being lost in Lahore, somebody dying 7 years earlier on average than they would, which is, you know, significant. If you have a situation like that, you really should be doing source apportionment. Having said that, in most cities, the source of pollution mainly is due to the due to transport. And that is, it's typically 80% in most cities. And I mean, it's due to the cars, the efficiency of the car engine burning the fuel. It's due to the fuel being used. It's due to the state of the roads. Because if you have a lot of dust being thrown up, believe you me, that has also a massive effect, more massive than people, realize, actually. And then, of course, even how the car moves. So if the traffic flow is moving, you know, the fuel is burning more efficiently. So if you have to have your traffic lights aligned, you have to have, and all these stops that you have, which for whatever reason, sometimes it's security. In Lahore, there's a lot of those roadblocks where you kind of go slow down to go through one little point and then onwards. Well, all those make a difference. All those affect the quality of the air. So that's kind of a big, major one. Of course, there are others. I mean, we hear a lot about crop burning, but that's seasonal. And yes, it does affect air pollution. The thing with Lahore is the air pollution is pretty bad throughout the year, not just only during those months where the crops are burned. So it's important to understand that. So one has to do something, but it's and then of course there's fuel use, coal power plants. I mean, that makes a difference. Actually, I have to tell you the story of London. You know, London was actually the first city in the world. In the 50s, I believe it was, they passed the Clean Air Act, the first Clean Air Act anywhere in the world. And London used to have terrible smog and fog. Let me tell you about London, because I think that's an important story. Actually, that was the first place in the world where there was a Clean Air Act in the 50s. And the reason for that was because they used to have terrible smogs in the 40s and 50s. Those smogs were due to people burning charcoal or coal in their houses for cooking and heating. And that was difficult to control. You know, you could not control pollution from so many different sources, so many households. So they had to shift to a different system whereby houses were cleaner and, you know, they were producing the energy in places where they could actually apply more pollution control. But if you look at London today, London still has a pollution problem, air pollution problem. They deal with it. It's more a transport problem, though. And they deal with it, yes, by requiring, they have cleaner fuels. They have cleaner cars. The transport fleet is cleaner. But then they've gone even further and said there's a congestion charge. You know, they're trying to limit cars so that they can control that pollution. So it's not even enough to go down all those routes. They have to have additional mechanisms to do that. So I think London really does tell you a story about how this is a constant battle. And certainly for cities like Lahore, where the meteorological conditions promote the, if you like, hold the pollution in place, it is going to be a continuous problem, and especially if the city goes larger and larger And therefore, there's no pollution from these various sources.
Before we turn to policy prescriptions, Kulsoom, I want to talk about adaptation or avoidance in this context. My own sort of research looks at provision of information and how access to information improves pollution avoidance, incentivizes citizens to undertake strategies to limit their exposure to pollutants. So how do you see the, you know, given your own work, how do you see the information or lack of information and how that could enable the citizenry to undertake action to protect themselves and to even create the necessary peer pressure to improve environmental outcomes?
Actually, again, I'm going to go to examples because I think one learns from those, even though I do believe that when one thinks of one's own cities, you have to look at what are the particular factors linked with, you know, with a particular city. But in Bogota, for example, the first thing was actually doing a campaign to get people to understand what the air pollution was doing to them in terms of health. I find that awareness is just not there in Pakistan. Yes, the years of life lost, Salman, you talk a lot about that. University in Karachi, Dr. Zafar Fatmi has also been doing work where they write about, you know, that they say 1/3 of the cases of strokes are actually due to air pollution in Pakistan, because 1/3 of them are due to environmental risk. And people don't think of strokes as really being linked with air pollution. Pneumonia is the biggest killer of children in Pakistan, actually, according to UNICEF data. Air pollution doubles your risk for pneumonia. So knowing all of these things and getting that message out, I think, is the first really important step. But the thing is, you also have to give people alternatives. You have to tell people, you know, you can't tell them, oh, you can't breathe the air. whether it's like, okay, don't use your car, use public transport, and you have to provide those alternatives. Or typically the standard is a health-based standard. You put something in place saying, and it, therefore it will vary. In Lahore, it will be quite different to, I don't know, Multan, because Lahore is worse air pollution than Multan, right? So your standards need to vary based on the situation and what happens in that city in terms of health, in terms of air pollution and how it stays and how that affects health. So you have to have a different standard in a different place depending on how bad the situation is. And typically, those health-based standards set the minimum threshold. So, you know, if you're an industrial, you're setting up an industry, you're buying equipment, etc. You buy it to meet that standard. You know, you don't go, you have to at least meet that standard. So it's the bottom line. But then you need to equally have taxes, pollution taxes, and that provides an incentive for the people polluting so that they don't pollute way above the standard. Otherwise, somebody could be polluting way above the standard and somebody could be polluting just a little bit above the standard. And, you know, there's no incentive really, either you're above or you're not. And therefore, to control that behavior, you have to have these incentives and things. Again, going back to Mexico City, for example, at that time, they were very focused on the lead because there was lead in the air as a result of the lead gasoline. And of course, at that time, unleaded gasoline was actually a lot more expensive. But they put a massive tax on the leaded gasoline. So the incentive, they created an incentive for people to buy unleaded and to shift towards that. So you have to use your pollution taxes, in a way that makes sense, where the polluter, the person who's polluting more, pays for it. So those two are important too.
Yeah, and just for the audience, there's one can distinguish between a direct tax on emissions, which would be you look at sources and you monitor exactly the amount of emissions that are coming out from each source, and then you tax those emissions put a per unit tax on those emissions. And then the example that Kulsoom gave on leaded gasoline, that's an indirect tax because you're not taxing lead itself, but you're taxing gasoline, which indirectly then shifts the incentives to phase out lead. But now, if we sort of speak about a move to policy prescriptions, Kulsoom. And it's interesting how, it's not as if Pakistan doesn't have rules and regulations. I mean, one can argue that, of course, the existing rules and regulations, have a lot of room for improvement.
You have to start with the awareness, and people have to want it. I think it's as simple as that. If people want something different, it'll happen. I like to think of solutions in terms of where is the world going. So if the world is going in a particular direction, long term, what is it that you can do now or position yourself for now, which actually helps you in a good way? It helps the entire economy. I try to look at things more at the level of economy, where the health dimension, or in economic terms, let's put it this way, where the health dimension is one dimension, but there are a whole bunch of other dimensions. So, look at where things are going in terms of, for example, border taxes on carbon, as the EU is putting into place. And that means exports to the EU will be subject to a border tax. There's a list of exports which will be subject to a tax. So that's based on the carbon that's used to produce those goods, whatever it is, cement, steel, you name it. And if that is the case, you're kind of tying your own hands if you're not thinking about solutions now that is going to affect your economy in a big way. And particularly solutions where the global and the local come together. Because I think that's the opportunity at the moment to kind of link the two and then to act on it. So that's one thought. The other thought is about, from a planning perspective, lots of things. I mean, when I think back, actually, we haven't even talked about acid rain. That's another one, which we don't even look at. So we have no clue how bad that is. Acid rain is when you put sulfur compounds into the air and then the rain brings them down, and it's acidic slightly, and it actually affects your crops or it affects building facades as well. But in China, it really affected the crops very badly, and that's how they began to act on air pollution. And then afterwards, they realized, oh, the health effects are really bad too. So the health actually came second. It was first an economic thing that drove it. So I think thinking through from a planning perspective, what can you do? And that is more doable, because if you look at, the example of the roads that you gave, right, or construction or roads, where roads are being unpaved and paved because whatever reason they're putting drains in or they're fixing them or something as simple as that, or construction of houses and buildings and so on. We know that the winter months are bad in Lahore and in Karachi. We know this already. So why not actually just say, oh, that construction won't happen during these 4 months or 5 months or whatever it is, but it will happen the other months of the year. So there are things like this which are kind of more, could be in a sense much easier to implement than starting by saying everybody's car has to change, or we have to suddenly put catalytic in cars, or we have to improve the quality of the gasoline. We need to do that. And in Lahore, it'll be pretty critical. But it's something that is expensive and is going to take a bit of time to do, to actually change an entire fleet in a city, a transport fleet. So I think one has to kind of look at these type of bigger solutions. How can you incentivize more people to use public transport, improve the quality of the public transport, put more public transport options in? And these things, I think, give you a chance to at least move in the right direction. At the same time, you have to make people aware. So give them options, but make them aware.
All right.
So it's a constant battle. And for Lahore, it will be a constant battle. I don't think one should pretend otherwise. I think in Karachi, it's actually a lot easier to clean it up. But you have to want to do it, right?
All right. So on that note, Kulsoom, we'll conclude. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for the great conversation. And for the audience, I'll tune in for our next episode.